the producer of Australian Rock of Ages, and it's a pleasure to bring you the first program in this series of 24 monthly programs that will feature the life and time stories of some of the people whose talent, skills and dedication have contributed to the development of Australian music, particularly through the 1960s and 1970s. In this program, we feature the story of Bob Bright.
And again, Dame Fortune shines, and we've got Roger Savage, first record to produce out here.
Well, that was a monster, wasn't it?
Ah, jumped off the radio, and that was totally Roger. Well, it was a good song, although I mean, Laurie wrote it as a 3/4 waltz, you know.
Oh right, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, when I hear a love song, dun 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 dun. Dun.
So who stepped it up?
I did.
You did.
I ruined his beautiful song.
No, I think his lyrics were great, but I think this was a great collaboration.
Because it
stands the time. I mean, nobody wants to be associated totally with just one piece of music all their life.
No.
But I would like to think that you...
But here comes another car. No.
You can appreciate that it is a classic in Australian
rock music. And it jumped off the radar because of what I said to Roger Savage. I said, mate, how can we get some bottom ending to this? Australian records were renowned for being thin and horrible. I said, it's got to jump off the radio. It's no, you know. I thought for a bit. About 10 minutes later, I said, he's come back in with a railway sleeper. Great big block of wood. Put a contact mic on either end of the block of wood and said, during the middle eight, you stamp on that.
Where that came from? Works.
Boom, boom.
Oh, boom, boom.
You know, so, just happy accidents that work, you know.
Was that recorded with the Rondells?
Yeah.
Was that your first work with them?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were a band that was doing a bit of work for Ron Blackmore, who was our manager. At that stage, we had a manager and everything.
Yeah.
And yeah, they were one of his sort of regular bands, and it worked, you know. Bernie O'Brien, I mean, people still go, how the hell did he play that solo? You know?
Well,
and we sort of basically bullied him into it. We had him cringing in a pit saying, no, man, it's not wild enough. Really go for it. Go on.
Heavily
influenced by the Kinks.
Heavily influenced by the Kinks.
Yeah.
Well, worthy people to be influenced by.
So
your fame and everything about you and Laurie and the Rondells is exploding around you because of this one track. Mm. Where does that take you to? Like, were you being pushed to record another single straight afterwards?
We recorded four tracks on our first session.
Right.
And that was our first and second record. Someone was recorded at the same time.
Yeah.
That's all along with you. And so with the flip side.
What's the story behind the writing of Someone? Was that Laurie again?
Didn't think so. It came off an album he had by, I know her name so well too. It's the same woman that wrote Just One Look for the Hollies. Just one look.
Oh, okay,
that's
no.
All it took, yeah.
I know the track, but no, I don't know.
She later went on. Doris Troy. Doris Troy. She was. See, Laurie Allen had the biggest collection of records I'd ever seen in my life. You know, he would compete with some major radio stations. And there's all these albums, and that's where Someone came from, listening to Doris Troy and going, we could do that. That's a good tune, yeah.
Someone is getting in trouble. Someone. Someone better get on the dough. And someone is you, cause you ain't treating me right. Someone's always having a ball. Someone's always out of sight. Someone's never home when I call. And someone is you, cause you ain't treating me right. Get yourself together, baby. Tell me what you're gonna do, do, do. Don't think you're clever, cause you'll never. Someone really thinks I'm blind. Someone gotta tell me to. 'cause you ain't treating me right. Get yourself together, baby. Tell me what you're gonna do, do, do. Don't think you're clever, because you'll never. You ain't treating me right, and someone is you, 'cause you ain't treating me right, and someone is you, 'cause you ain't treating me right.
But I mean, we need to reflect that actually having I Belong With You as an original was quite unique, because at that stage everything was covers.
Exactly. Yeah.
Every Australian record that was made was a cover of something. I mean, you know, the Twilight's made their name out of covers.
Beatles covers.
Beatles covers.
You know, we sort of decided right from the start that at least one side of everything, or 50% of everything we put out, would be written by us.
Right.
Yeah. So we kept to that all the way through.
We look back at that time now, that period of from I Belong With You through the 60s. Did you get carried away with what was happening?
Yeah.
Looking back, it would have been hard not to.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, we made lots of mistakes because we were carried away with it, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas with more, then again, the other side of the coin is if you don't try things out, you never know, you know. So I don't, no regrets, but yeah, there's things we shouldn't have done. Like, we shouldn't have done the ABC television show. It meant, A, that we were living in each other's pockets 7 days a week.
Not healthy.
B, we were made of more a middle-of-the-road act than where we had been, just purely because it was a television show that was trying to drag in. Mm. And basically, after it finished was when we, in inverted commas, split up, you know. Bobby drops Laurie, I think, was one of the
heroes. Yeah.
And that wasn't the case at all.
What was the story?
Well, the story was we were sick to death of each other. These days, you would say, we're going to have 6 months off,
yeah,
and then we'll do something. Yeah. In those days, if you weren't working, you were split up.
Yeah, that's right.
you know, there was none of that, oh, we'll be back next year.
So where did that leave you? First of all, where did that leave you inside yourself? How did you deal with that mentally? Because, I mean, you've had a very intense period of excitement and success, and it's you and Laurie, and all of a sudden it's you.
Yeah. I probably made an even bigger mistake by doing the next television show that producer wanted to do, which was a thing called Start Living with Judy Jarks, Idris Jones. And I did a lot of experimental things on that, you know, like an old Danny Kaye song, you know. I'm five, I'm a big boy.
Didn't
now.
Do anything
I'm,
for your career, but did no, you no. find that personal?
I loved it. Oh,
right.
I loved it.
Yeah.
And I did, around about that time, the ABC put out a commemorative album of Summer of the 17th Doll, and I got to sing on that, you know. Totally alien to the sort of music that...
Which would have been hard enough anyway, because there was some massive changes again by the late 60s in the styles of music, wasn't there? I mean, we were moving away from that, the pop stuff, into the...
It started, the psychedelia.
Yeah. So you've got a double whammy happening here.
I think Laurie and I had one of the first psychedelic records made.
Which was?
What was it called now? Da, 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 da. It was off our last album, Every Second Day. Basically, it consists of that whole album Laurie and I played guitars on with Gary and Wayne. So it was like a sit around the campfire type album. But that particular song was a riff where... If you imagine one guitar player on bottom E string, da 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 da, and the other player's playing da 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 da.
Almost the mirror.
Yeah, together.
Over each other. Yes.
Yeah, and that was the whole riff right through the whole song, and it was very psychedelic for its time.
Yes.
It was like, what? What's going on there? A long time. I got a that album, we actually found an old drum machine of a Hammond organ, the very first drum machines that came out, and we did this whole track called I Want Woman.
I have a copy of that.
Have you? Yeah. Well, that never got released.
No, no. But it's really quite exciting because it's very experimental.
Yeah, totally experimental.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you're not looking for, you know, a piece of pop music, and if you're looking for what people were doing to break out of the norm, then that's really high up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Make any money, and it was never going to make any money.
No, you don't make money being adventurous.
No, you don't make money being adventurous. So where does Bobby Bright see himself going in the 70s?
In the 70s?
Because you've left, you and Laurie have parted ways, or as the media said, you've broken up.
Bobby dumps Laurie.
Bobby dumps Laurie, even worse than breaking up, that's right, yes.
Lily Brett?
Yep.
Famous author these days. Back then, she just used to write for GoSet. And she said to me, you should try radio, you know. You'd be good on radio. Oh, how do I do that? Well, just do a tape, you know, just pick a few songs, find some ads in the paper, read the ads and stitch them together like you were doing. All right. So I did that, and she arranged a meeting with a guy called Dick Hemming, who was the program manager of 3XY at the time. And I took my tape along and played it the same, and Dick sort of sat back there very pontifically as he did and said, oh, so you'd like to be on the radio, would you? Okay. Well, do you know how to work the panels? No. Well, you better get down there and learn, because you're on at midnight. Bang, you know.
Well, things just like happen really quickly with you, don't they? I mean, you talk about your mum saying you've got to step over that line, you're stepping over quite often.
Yeah, but it's still am, mate.
Yeah, yeah. Not a bad way to
go. It keeps you alive, I think.
Yeah. So, bang, you're on the air at midnight.
So,
Did you get to choose your own playlists in those days, or no?
No, there was a large number of things to choose from.
Right.
Like you weren't limited to 20 records. But you had to be on the playlist. However, it didn't take me long to break that rule too.
Yeah, it's not surprising.
When I actually left there for the first time, I actually worked there twice. The first time, a guy from the record library gave me all these singles, and they were the stuff I'd always been playing but was never on the playlist, you know. yeah, and I quite liked radio, and I did for a while. I mean, I didn't do Midnight to Dawn after that. It was just a tester, you know.
Yeah.
But I did 10 till 1 that night.
That's a pretty good slot.
Yeah. I used to come on after Hal Todd. And then what was it? Garner Ted Armstrong. Oh, you remember them?
I had forgotten.
Here's Garner Ted Armstrong.
I understand why I had forgotten too. That's right.
Yeah.
But that would have been on a relay situation or something.
When he finished. Hal would hit the button on that and then he'd shoot through and I'd get in there. So then that was that incarnation. I can't remember why I left the...
Doesn't really matter.
No, it doesn't matter, but I finished up there again doing Drive, you know.
Did you ever go back in the 70s to playing music?
Yeah, I did a record. Lynn Randell brought me back a tune by Al Hibbs, the guy that wrote Sunny.
Yeah.
It was a song called Would You Believe Grass is Green and Sky is Blue. I recorded that for CBS. Coronet.
CBS.
CBS, yeah.
What sort of response did it get?
Mediocre. Was it, you know, Soul wasn't big at that
stage. I was going to say, it sounded a little bit, for that period, out of place.
Yeah.
You took to it because you...
I've always liked sort of baritone singers because I am a baritone, and with Laurie, I always had to sing out the top of my head because he had a belief that if it wasn't as high as you could go, people didn't like it.
Yet. Oh, okay. Well, look, but I have to say, for the period where you used it, it worked.
It worked.
Did you and Laurie ever sort of reconnect again after you broke off with him?
I think practically every year after that we did something, you know. Yeah. For a while we did a Darwin and Alice Springs tour.
Because it grew past just being two musicians, didn't it?
It
was a genuine friendship.
Yeah. We never really had an argument about anything. You know, we'd have sort of bickering, but
of course.
But nothing and you know, Laurie, for all his ailments, and he was a sick man most of the time, you know, we'd go to a gig and he'd say, stop the car, I've got to, and he'd have asthma come in so bad that he would get out of the cab and make himself vomit to try and clear it. And, you know, half an hour later you'd be on stage and you'd never know that the guy on here with you now is out. And I mean, even the last gig we did together, which was just 2 weeks before he died, he said to me, I might sit down during some of the solos tonight. You know, so don't, you know, go out front and take over sort of thing. And I just went, oh, okay. Because he'd had metal plate rods in his leg from a bad car accident about 10 years earlier. And I naively thought, oh, well, his legs must be playing up, he's going to sit down. But obviously...
It was worse.
It was worse because, you know, 2 weeks after that he had the giant heart attack that they couldn't revive him from. 100% adrenaline they were pumping him with.
Wow. It's actually even difficult to know how to phrase the question when we're dealing with Laurie's passing, but is it a stupid question to say that shattered you? Did it shatter you? What sort of effect did it have on you? Because you're talking about a long friendship and an intense and involved.
Yeah.
Many layers.
I had to think about it because he left word that he didn't want anyone else speaking at his funeral except me. So I had to do the whole thing, and it was more difficult because later years of his life he spent quite a lot of time in Sydney. So there was a whole group of people in Sydney that didn't know anything about what he'd done in Melbourne.
Is that right?
And I had to sort of stitch together. Now, I had been up to Sydney and stayed with his place and I knew some of these people, but, you know, it was more the Tamworth crew and that sort of stuff.
So he wasn't big on living on his history?
No, not really. I mean, he always had a guitar strap with Laurie Allen written on it.
That's
showbiz, But no, he was always going forward, always going forward.
Was it a difficult thing for you to deal with, having to... Or was it... I hate to put it like this. Was it done like it's part of the show? This is Laurie's show? Or was it...
How did I write? Look, I wrote it all out. It took me a week or so to write. I practiced it a lot because I knew I would be affected by it. But on the day, I pulled it off. I think my last words were, "So, see you later, mate. You're a legend." And at that point, it broke. Got the tears. But the applause was like I'd just done a Raw Command performance. It was like there was a lot of people there.
Yeah.
And there was big applause anyway.
Yeah, look, he was your mate and he was your singing partner, but to a lot of Australians, he was also part of their lives.
Yeah, you know.
As you are. I mean, it's an inevitability of having that sort of success.
What you are is a bookmark in someone's life.
Yes.
You know, the majority of people that come up to you... in the nostalgia sense, who will say, oh, I remember you and your mate. Me and my friends were in Lawn and you were playing, I was hitchhiking to bloody Brisbane and I heard...
Hey, it was like me saying to you, I remember the gig at Mentone.
Yeah, you're a bookmark in their lives, and it's a great thing.
Yeah.
You know, you relate to music that way.
So it kind of closes a chapter because there can be no more.
I was talking with a film... I wanted to put together... a sort of tribute thing, and I was talking, I can't remember his name now, about they're doing this thing, and he said, I don't think you've realised Bob, that it's not just the passing of Laurie Allen here, it's the passing of Bobby and Laurie.
Yes.
And I hadn't really got to that in my own head. And that, bastard, he's gone up and left me.
Yes.
No, I understand. You
understand
what I mean?
Of course, like, I totally
very,
understand.
Very hard to go on and be a duo when you're a single person.
Yeah.
Look, we weren't living in each other's pockets. It naturally moved me, the loss. But it wasn't like my life had come to an end. I still had lots of other things I had to think about, you know.
Yeah.
So it wasn't crushing sort of thing, but yeah, it was.
Stand and the cars go by. Some of them honking, some just wave high. It seems like life and the cars both just passed me by. Hitchhiker, you know, no special place to be going. I just go whichever way the wind's blowing. It's hot today, I'd kinda like to be where it's snowing. Well, I don't know, maybe I'll just stay here with them. Green grass is growing. Hey, here comes another car. I wonder, is he slowing down? Hitchhiker. 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 Like a restless tiger, you can't stand still. And you never. All boys dream, so did I. My hands once reached out to touch the sky. Is this the sky that I reached out for? Just the dust of the road, nothing more. Hey, here comes another car. Hitchhiker. Hitchhiker.
This program is a Handsome Doc production and is podcast through the Toorak Times and TAG.